Chapter 17. Some women, I grant, would not appear to advantage seated on a pillion, and attired in a drab Joseph and a drab beaver bonnet, with a crown resembling a small stew pan, for a garment suggesting a coachman's greatcoat, cut out under an exiguity of cloth, that would only allow of miniature capes, is not well adapted to conceal deficiencies of contour, nor is drab a color that will throw sallow cheeks into lively contrast. It was all the greater triumph to Miss Nancy Lammeter's beauty that she looked thoroughly bewitching in that costume, as, seated on the pillion behind her tall, erect father, she held one arm round him, and looked down, with open-eyed anxiety, at the treacherous snow-covered pools and puddles, which sent up formidable splashings of mud under the stamp of Dobbin's foot. A painter would, perhaps, have preferred her in those moments, when she was free from self-consciousness. But certainly the bloom on her cheeks was at its highest point of contrast with the surrounding drab, when she arrived at the door of the Red House, and saw Mr. Godfrey Cass ready to lift her from the pillion. She wished her sister Priscilla had come up at the same time behind the servant, for then she would have contrived that Mr. Godfrey should have lifted off Priscilla first, and, in the meantime, she would have persuaded her father to go round to the horse block instead of alighting at the doorsteps. It was very painful, when you had made it quite clear to a young man, that you were determined not to marry him, however much he might wish it, that he would still continue to pay you marked attentions. Besides, why didn't he always show the same attentions, if he meant them sincerely, instead of being so strange as Mr. Godfrey Cass was, sometimes behaving as if he didn't want to speak to her, and taking no notice of her for weeks and weeks, and then, all on a sudden, almost making love again. Moreover, it was quite plain he had no real love for her, else he would not let people have that to say of him which they did say. Did he suppose that Miss Nancy Lammeter was to be won by any man, squire or no squire, who led a bad life? That was not what as he had been used to see in her own father, who was the soberest and best man in that countryside, only a little hot and hasty now and then, if things were not done to the minute. All these thoughts rushed through Miss Nancy's mind, in their habitual succession, in the moments between her first sight of Mr. Godfrey Cass standing at the door and her own arrival there. Happily, the squire came out too, and gave a loud greeting to her father, so that, somehow, under cover of this noise she seemed to find concealment for her confusion and neglect of any suitably formal behavior, while she was being lifted from the pillion by strong arms which seemed to find her ridiculously small and light. And there was the best reason for hastening into the house at once, since the snow was beginning to fall again, threatening an unpleasant journey for such guests as were still on the road. These were a small minority, for already the afternoon was beginning to decline, and there would not be too much time for the ladies who came from a distance to attire themselves in readiness for the early tea which was to inspirit them for the dance. There was a buzz of voices through the house, as Miss Nancy entered, mingled with the scrape of a fiddle preluding in the kitchen, but the Lammeters were guests whose arrival had evidently been thought of, so much that it had been watched for from the windows, for Mrs. Kimball, who did the honors at the Red House on these great occasions, came forward to meet Miss Nancy in the hall, and conduct her upstairs. Mrs. Kimball was the squire's sister, as well as the doctor's wife, a double dignity, with which her diameter was in direct proportion, so that, a journey upstairs, being rather fatiguing to her, she did not oppose Miss Nancy's request to be allowed to find her way alone to the blue room, where the Miss Lammeter's bandboxes had been deposited on their arrival in the morning. There was hardly a bedroom in the house, where feminine compliments were not passing and feminine toilets going forward, in various stages, in space made scanty by extra beds spread upon the floor, and Miss Nancy, as she entered the blue room, had to make her little formal curtsy to a group of six. On the one hand, There were ladies no less important than the two Miss Guns, the wine merchant's daughters from Litherley, dressed in the height of fashion, with the tightest skirts and the shortest waists, and gazed at by Miss Ladbroke of the Old Pastures, with a shyness not unsustained by inward criticism. Partly, Miss Ladbroke felt that her own skirt must be regarded as unduly lax by the Miss Guns, and partly, that it was a pity the Miss Guns did not show that judgment which she herself would show, if she were in their place, by stopping a little on this side of the fashion. On the other hand, Mrs. Ladbroke was standing in skull cap and front, with her turban in her hand, curtsying and smiling blandly and saying, "After you, ma'am," to another lady in similar circumstances, who had politely offered the precedence at the looking glass. But Miss Nancy had no sooner made her curtsy than an elderly lady came forward, whose full white muslin kerchief, and mob cap round her curls of smooth gray hair, were in daring contrast with the puffed yellow satins and top-knotted caps of her neighbors. She approached Miss Nancy with much primness, and said, with a slow, treble suavity, "Niece, I hope I see you well in health." Miss Nancy kissed her aunt's cheek dutifully, and answered, with the same sort of amiable primness, "Quite well, I thank you, aunt, and I hope I see you the same." "Thank you, niece, I keep my health for the present. And how is my brother-in-law?" These dutiful questions and answers were continued until it was ascertained in detail that the Lammeters were all as well as usual, and the Osgoods likewise, also that niece Priscilla must certainly arrive shortly, and that traveling on pillions in snowy weather was unpleasant, though a Joseph was a great protection. Then Nancy was formally introduced to her aunt's visitors, the Miss Guns, as being the daughters of a mother known to their mother, though now for the first time induced to make a journey into these parts. And these ladies were so taken by surprise at finding such a lovely face and figure in an out-of-the-way country place, that they began to feel some curiosity about the dress she would put on when she took off her Joseph. Miss Nancy, whose thoughts were always conducted with the propriety and moderation conspicuous in her manners, remarked to herself that the Miss Guns were rather hard-featured than otherwise, and that such very low dresses as they wore might have been attributed to vanity if their shoulders had been pretty, but that, being as they were, it was not reasonable to suppose that they showed their necks from a love of display, but rather from some obligation not inconsistent with sense and modesty. She felt convinced, as she opened her box, that this must be her Aunt Osgood's opinion, for Miss Nancy's mind resembled her aunt's to a degree that everybody said was surprising, considering the kinship was on Mr. Osgood's side. And though you might not have supposed it from the formality of their greeting, there was a devoted attachment and mutual admiration between aunt and niece. Even Miss Nancy's refusal of her cousin Gilbert Osgood on the ground, solely that he was her cousin, though it had grieved her aunt greatly, had not in the least cooled the preference which had determined her to leave Nancy several of her hereditary ornaments, let Gilbert's future wife be whom she might. Three of the ladies quickly retired, but the Miss Guns were quite content that Mrs. Osgood's inclination to remain with her niece gave them also a reason for staying, to see the rustic beauty's toilet. And it was really a pleasure from the first opening of the bandbox, where everything smelt of lavender and rose leaves, to the clasping of the small coral necklace that fitted closely around her little white neck. Everything belonging to Miss Nancy was of delicate purity and nattiness. Not a crease was where it had no business to be, not a bit of her linen professed whiteness without fulfilling its profession. The very pins on her pincushion were stuck in after a pattern from which she was careful to allow no aberration. And as for her own person, it gave the same idea of perfect unvarying neatness as the body of a little bird. It is true that her light brown hair was cropped behind like a boy's, and was dressed in front in a number of flat rings that lay quite away from her face. But there was no sort of coiffure that could make Miss Nancy's cheek and neck look otherwise than pretty, and when at last she stood complete in her silvery twilled silk, her lace tucker, her coral necklace, and coral eardrops, the Miss Guns could see nothing to criticize except her hands, which bore the traces of butter making, cheese crushing, and even still coarser work. But Miss Nancy was not ashamed of that, for even while she was dressing she narrated to her aunt how she and Priscilla had packed their boxes yesterday, because this morning was baking morning, and since they were leaving home, it was desirable to make a good supply of meat pies for the kitchen. And as she concluded this judicious remark, she turned to the Miss Guns, that she might not commit the rudeness of not including them in the conversation. The Miss Guns smiled stiffly, and thought what a pity it was that these rich country people, who could afford to buy such good clothes, really Miss Nancy's lace and silk were very costly, should be brought up in utter ignorance and vulgarity. She actually said, 8 for meat, appen for herbs, and SS for horse, which, to young ladies living in good litterly society, who habitually said horse, even in domestic privacy, and only said appen on the right occasions, was necessarily shocking. Miss Nancy, indeed, had never been to any school higher than Dame Tedman's. Her acquaintance with profane literature hardly went beyond the rhymes as he had worked in her large sampler under the Lamb and the Shepherdess. And in order to balance an account, she was obliged to effect her subtraction by removing visible metallic shillings and sixpences from a visible metallic total. There is hardly a servant maid in these days who is not better informed than Miss Nancy, yet as he had the essential attributes of a lady high veracity, delicate honor in her dealings, deference to others, and refined personal habits, and lest these should not suffice to convince grammatical fair ones that her feelings can at all resemble theirs, I will add that she was slightly proud and exacting, and as constant in her affection towards a baseless opinion as towards an erring lover. The anxiety about Sister Priscilla, which had grown rather active by the time the coral necklace was clasped, was happily ended by the entrance of that cheerful-looking lady herself, with a face made blowsy by cold and damp. After the first questions and greetings, she turned to Nancy, and surveyed her from head to foot, then wheeled her round, to ascertain that the back view was equally faultless. "What do you think o' these gowns, Aunt Osgood?" said Priscilla, while Nancy helped her to unrobe. "Very handsome indeed, niece," said Mrs. Osgood, with a slight increase of formality. She always thought niece Priscilla too rough. "I'm obliged to have the same as Nancy, you know, for all I'm 5 years older, and it makes me look yellow, for she never will have anything without I have mine just like it, because she wants us to look like sisters. And I tell her, folks all think it's my weakness makes me fancy as I shall look pretty in what she looks pretty in. For I am ugly, there's no denying that. I feature my father's family. But, law, I don't mind, do you?" Priscilla here turned to the Miss Guns, rattling on into much preoccupation with the delight of talking, to notice that her candor was not appreciated. "He pretty uns do for fly catchers, they keep the men off us. I've no opinion o' the men, Miss Gunn, I don't know what you have. And as for fretting and stewing about what they LL think of you from morning till night, and making your life uneasy about what they're doing, when they're out o' your sight, as I tell Nancy, it's a folly no woman need be guilty of, if she's got a good father and a good home. Let her leave it to them as have got no fortin, and can't help themselves. As I say, Mr. Have Your Own Way is the best husband, and the only one I'd ever promise to obey. I know it isn't pleasant, when you've been used to living in a big way, and managing hogsheads and all that, to go and put your nose in by somebody else's fireside, or to sit down by yourself to a scrag or a knuckle. But, thank God, my father's a sober man and likely to live. And if you've got a man by the chimney corner, it doesn't matter, if he's childish the business needn't be broke up." The delicate process of getting her narrow gown over her head without injury to her smooth curls obliged Miss Priscilla to pause in this rapid survey of life, and Mrs. Osgood seized the opportunity of rising and saying, "Well, niece, you'll follow us. The Miss Guns will like to go down. Sister, said Nancy, when they were alone, you've offended the Miss Guns, I'm sure. What have I done, child? Said Priscilla, in some alarm. Why, you asked them if they minded about being ugly or so very blunt. Law, did I? Well, it popped out. It's a mercy I said no more, for I'm a bad un to live with folks when they don't like the truth. But as for being ugly, look at me, child, in this silver-colored silk I told you, how it 'ud be I look as yellow as a daffodil. Anybody 'ud say you wanted to make a mockin' of me. No, Prissy, don't say so. I begged and prayed of you not to let us have this silk if you'd like another better. I was willing to have your choice, you know I was, said Nancy, in anxious self-vindication. Nonsense, child, you know you'd set your heart on this, and reason good, for you're the color o' cream. It 'ud be fine doings for you to dress yourself to suit my skin. What I find fault with is that notion o' yours as I must dress myself just like you. But you do as you like with me, you always did, from when first you begun to walk. If you wanted to go the field's length you'd go, and there was no whipping you, for you looked as prim and innocent as a daisy all the while. Prissy, said Nancy, gently, as she fastened a coral necklace, exactly like her own, round Priscilla's neck, which was very far from being like her own, I'm sure I'm willing to give way as far as is right, but who shouldn't dress alike, if it isn't sisters? Would you have us go about looking as if we were no kin to one another, us that have got no mother, and not another sister in the world? I'd do what was right, if I dressed in a gown dyed with cheese coloring, and I'd rather you choose, and let me wear what pleases you. There you go again. You'd come round to the same thing, if one talked to you from Saturday night till Saturday morning. It'll be fine fun to see how you'll master your husband, and never raise your voice above the singing o' the kettle all the while. I like to see the men mastered. Don't talk so, Prissy, said Nancy, blushing. Oh no, I don't mean ever to be married. Oh, you never mean a fiddlestick's end, said Priscilla, as she arranged her discarded dress, and closed her bandbox. Who shall I have to work for when father's gone, if you are to go, and take notions in your head, and be an old maid, because some folks are no better than they should be? I haven't a bit o' patience with you sitting on an addle deck forever, as if there was never a fresh un in the world. One old maid's enough out o' two sisters, and I shall do credit to a single life, for God Almighty meant me for it. Come, we can go down now. I'm as ready as a mawkin can be, there's nothing wanting to frighten the crows, now I've got my eardroppers in. As the two Miss Lammeters walked into the large parlor together, anyone who did not know the character of both might certainly have supposed that the reason why the square-shouldered, clumsy, high-featured Priscilla wore a dress the facsimile of her pretty sister's was either the mistaken vanity of the one, or the malicious contrivance of the other in order to set off her own rare beauty. But the good-natured self-forgetful cheeriness and common sense of Priscilla would soon have dissipated the one suspicion, and the modest calm of Nancy's speech and manners told. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.